Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to Podcast Like It's 1992, the podcast where we talk about the films of 1992 from inside a little genie's bottle here in 2023. I'm your host, Phil Iskov.
I am your special guest host, Emily St. James, filling in for your normal host, a carpet who can only communicate in pantomime, which makes it a weird fit to host a podcast.
It's true. It's true. But perhaps most importantly, with us today for our very first episode of 1992 is Esty Heim, singer, songwriter, composer, actress. Is there anything she can't do?
I could list a couple things.
But I can't thank you enough for coming on to talk with us, Esty, about Aladdin. When I asked you to come on the podcast, you singled out two films. Aladdin and Newsies. We hope to talk with you about Newsies at a later date. But my question to you is, was this a big movie for you as a kid?
Aladdin was huge for me as a kid. Okay. I think I had a really big crush on, oh my God.
The genie? Or Aladdin?
Yes, yes. On the genie. I had a big crush on Robin Williams. Thank you. Jesus Christ, Phil.
It's okay. No worries.
I'm getting my sea legs. It's early. I loved Robin Williams. I thought he was the funniest. I mean, I was a huge Mork and Mindy girl. I would watch Mork and Mindy on Nick at Night. I would like sneak out of my bedroom. My parents put me to sleep and I'd put on Nick at Night and watch Mork and Mindy. So I loved Robin Williams, like very much loved Robin Williams. And there was definitely like a 1-2 punch of like Aladdin and then Mrs. Doubtfire. I think they came out like right around the same. I mean,
It was the next year.
Yeah. So like I was the CFO, COO, CEO of the Robin Williams fan club at that point. At that point I was like a 6-year-old kid.
I was being the oldest on this podcast, I was 12. But I do feel like, and it is interesting because Rob Williams does have a family friendly lane because he's so like quote unquote wacky. And I think the kids probably, I'm assuming, loved how sort of they didn't get, I imagine, half the references he was making, but it felt funny and you just felt like you were in on the joke as a kid, which is part of the charm of this film, I think. Emily and I were texting a little bit about this and like it shouldn't work, but he's unbelievable in this film.
I can't believe you didn't get a William F. Buckley reference when you were 12. Like, that feels like a thing you should have known.
I still don't think I got the William F. Buckley reference.
I didn't get, I definitely did not get the William F. Buckley. I did not get that memo, guys.
I will be honest and say I didn't realize it was a William F. Buckley reference. I looked it up and was like, oh, that's what that's supposed to be. And was like, okay, all right.
Yeah, it feels like, I mean, there's a lot of references in this that at the time, I mean, you have a Arsenio Hall reference, which feels very sort of time stamped.
But that, like, I got as a kid.
Totally. So did I. It was definitely, so I remember seeing this in the theater, because again, I'm older than everybody here, but I remember seeing it at 12 and feeling like I was getting most of it, but even then I wasn't getting everything. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's he's just going a mile a minute in this movie.
I know. I would actually be really interested to hear from the filmmakers, like, did they just let Robin Williams improv?
In fact, they let him improvise so much that the film couldn't be nominated for Best Adapted Screenplay.
Is that true?
Because there was so much improvisation in it, what? Which I think is hilarious.
That's, wow. I didn't know that was like a rule.
Well, I'm assuming, yeah. Well, because like they deviated so much from the source material, quote unquote, that I guess, but I would also argue, there have been nominations, for instance, like the Coen brothers getting nominated for adapted for Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? And you're like,
there was
really
definitely improv in that movie.
So it's.
Did Borat get nominated for adapted? Because like that is all improv. Like,
yeah, I don't know. But I will say that to answer your question, SD, I think most of this was recorded apparently in the sort of downtime while he was doing Hook and Toys, which are the two films that bookend this movie. So I kind of feel like they must have just propped up a microphone and said, like, go.
Yeah.
And then they animated around his shit.
What a fun way to make a movie. What a fun way to make an animated movie. But it probably set them back a couple, like, months, I'm sure, like, to try to get, like,
if there's one thing animators love, it's chaos. That's just thing that I know, you know.
Animation's a really short process to begin with. I'm sure that all of these wrenches he was throwing it. Yeah, totally normal.
The animators loved it.
Yeah, loved every second of it. It should be said, too, that this film sort of has a notorious kind of, I don't know if controversy is the right word, but Robin Williams did this movie for scale.
Okay.
He did it as kind of a favor and said he would do it for scale, but only if they didn't use him in the marketing or sold any toys around the genie, to which Disney immediately did both of those things.
Right.
And he was super pissed and didn't do a movie with Disney for a very long time. They tried, apparently, I think it was, it was Eisner, I believe, at the time. And he gave him a Picasso painting to try to, like, make it up to him. And Robin Williams was like,
it didn't work.
But ultimately they mended bridges. But I do think it is interesting, how sort of reticent he was to do this film, but he also does Fern Gully in 92 as well, so it's like he's not like against doing animated movies.
I mean, also as an actor performer, being able to just go into a studio in your PJs,
right, exactly,
and be able to just like sit on a chair and read lines, like, what a clutch job.
Well, the key gig, if you ask me, or one of the gigs that feels incredible, was Kristen Bell doing Gossip Girl. So she literally just does two little VOs at the top from her bed, gets paid probably like a couple, you know, probably $20,000-$30,000 an episode.
Great.
To just literally do nothing.
Yeah. Congrats, Kristen Bell. You just paid for your kid's private school.
Exactly.
You know, exactly. Like,
yeah. Yeah, it's a sweet gig.
I think, at that point, it was probably just that Robin Williams was working so much. He was doing Toys and Hook and Mrs. Doubtfire and Aladdin. He was probably just listen, like, I'll do this as a favor, but like, I'm not doing any of the promo because I'm too fucking busy.
And I'm not going to read your script.
Right. And I'm going to make it my own. And honestly, thank God he did.
I agree.
Because I don't think any writer could actually do a better job than Robin Williams as an improver.
Totally.
Do you think they had like lines where they were like, no, Robin, we need you to actually say this line as written? Like, because there mean, are like the living space thing is like, yes, you know, yes. It gets repeated by Aladdin, played by Steve from Full House, which was a big thing for me at the time.
Oh, I know that.
And like he repeats it. So like, I assume that was in the script, or they just recorded Robin Williams and were like, we can use this and this and this.
I think,
like,
I think that my guess maybe. Is the latter. I mean, my feeling is that I imagine that there were certain things that he had to say, like the rules the genie has, or like things that just yes. like bearing walls of like, you know, rules that are necessary. But I imagine there's like less than 10 lines that he had to say. And the rest is just him off doing what he
off, wants. Yeah, off book.
Yeah.
And I think this, I mean, and that's, I think he was just like, I'll do the song. I'm not going to rewrite the song.
Yeah, exactly. He's like, I'll do A Friend Like Me and Priscilla, yeah. But that's basically it. So,
yeah, that's it.
Obviously, Esty, as a musician, have to ask you about the songs for a second here. Now, I do feel like when I hit play on this yesterday on Disney Plus, and it looks phenomenal. The 4K remaster, they did a beautiful job. It really does look like better than it's ever looked. The songs are bangers. Like, really, yes. All of them are great. Truly. There's no bad songs in this movie. And yet, I would argue that this movie doesn't necessarily feel like the songs get enough credit. Like, when you think of, I'm not saying that, I mean, A Whole New World is obviously iconic, right? But yes. I'm not convinced that the other songs, if you compare it to a Beauty and the Beast, a Little Mermaid, a Lion King, which are all sort of in that run, yes. I don't know that it has the same love, that the songs have the same love. Maybe I'm wrong. I'm just curious what you think about that.
Well, I am on this podcast waxing philosophical about my love for this movie, so I'm completely biased.
Sure.
You
have a favorite song?
But, well, I mean, okay, just to give you an idea, in my MySpace bio was, like, when it goes to, like, when it asks for, like, occupation, it was riffraff, street rat, scoundrel, etc.
That's incredible. That should be your Twitter bio, by the way.
I know. But I also don't know if people, I mean, necessarily would get the reference now. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. But yeah, when I was in high school on MySpace, I was obsessed with that song.
Such a good
and song. I just thought it's such a good song. So I love the song from Aladdin. I love that song. I used to say that I could have probably done Aladdin as a one-woman show.
By the way, people would pay to see that, by the way.
Yeah.
I was watching it with my wife and she was like reciting all of the dialogue along with it. And it's just like, I feel like for people of a certain age, like this is just like ingrained in your brain.
Yeah.
And it's so rewatchable. This is like, yeah.
There's a special copy in my brain that has just dialogue from Aladdin, just like it's emblazoned crazy. In my mind.
It really does feel like it's in our DNA. I want to give just a brief little bit of context for perhaps anyone who has not seen Aladdin. And if you haven't, what are you doing? Go watch Aladdin.
Shame on you.
Seriously. Aladdin is a lovable street urchin who meets Princess Jasmine, a beautiful daughter of the Sultan of Agrabah. While visiting her exotic palace, Aladdin stumbles upon a magic oil lamp that unleashes a powerful, wisecracking, larger-than-life genie. As Aladdin and the genie start to become friends, they soon embark on a dangerous mission to stop the evil sorcerer Jafar from overthrowing young Jasmine's kingdom. Aladdin opened on November 11th, 1992, against Bram Stoker's Dracula, Passenger 57, A River Runs Through It, Under Siege, and The Mighty Ducks. It will go on to make $504 million on a $28 million budget, the most successful film of 92. Aladdin has 95% on Rotten Tomatoes from critics, 92% from audiences. Roger Ebert gave the film 3 stars, saying Robin Williams and the animation were born for one another, and in Aladdin they finally meet. Williams' speed of comic invention has always been too fast for Flesh and Blood. The way he flashes in and out of characters can be dizzying. In Disney's new animated film Aladdin, he's liberated at last, playing a genie who has complete freedom over his form, who can instantly be anybody or anything. The genie is the best thing in the movie, which is good fun, but not on par with The Little Mermaid and Beauty and the Beast, the two films which Disney essentially rebirth the feature-length animation. For our listeners, Esty's shaking her head ferociously. So, Esty, is this your favorite Disney film?
No, it's not my favorite Disney film.
What is your favorite?
It's not my favorite.
I'm just so curious.
That's like Sophie's Choice.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, I can't. I don't think I'd be able to actually.
Well, but these four films, which is essentially, I would argue, this is the run, right? Like, this is
it.
There are people that'll you know throw in a Pocahontas, I guess, but like, I don't know. This feels like the four films.
Pocahontas was a big one for me too.
Okay,
but the Little Mermaid. Okay, her name's Ariel, right?
She is. It's Ariel. Yeah.
My middle name is Ariel.
Because of Ariel?
Nope.
Okay.
Nope. Nope. I was born in 86. Little Mermaid came out in 89.
Correct.
So I was 3 or 4 when I saw it in the theaters, and my parents took me to see it. Okay. And my mom, I remember this like it was this morning. I'm watching Little Mermaid, and I'm so transfixed on this mermaid. And I think my mom saw my face and was like, "Esty, just so you know, her name is the same as your middle name, Ariel." And I took that, like, the main character energy that I exhibited as a 3-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
I then went to preschool the next morning and told my two friends, Romeo Farrell and Jessica Bernstein, "I have the same middle name as Ariel the Little Mermaid."
So you bragged about this?
Oh, bragged about it. To which my friends went, "Okay." Left me, turned around. I'm 3, by the way. I'm 3 years old. Sure. At preschool. They come back to me. This is like in the span of like 20 minutes. Jessica and Romy come up to me and go, "Well, just so you know, my middle name is Snow White and Jessica's middle name is Cinderella. So you're not that special."
Damn.
Those are some good bits. Those are some good bits.
3-year-olds. Three.
Yeah. It's yeah. I mean, kids are brutal. And of course they wanted to make you feel terrible about it.
Yeah. Well, they were jealous.
Obviously.
They were just jealous. Little Mermaid, I loved.
And Ariel gave you were you a little bit like, "This is my new personality"?
Yes.
Because I'm named after her? I mean, yes.
Absolutely.
Sure.
I was like, I am the Little Mermaid.
Bill, and named after Esty. Let's just be clear.
Yes, no, my
apologies. That's the cause and effect.
Ariel was named after Esty.
It's true.
Yeah.
It's true. Truly, truly.
Did you have a crush on Aladdin out of curiosity? Or was the genie your crush? I mean,
Aladdin is my type. If you've looked at my string of boyfriends, and Phil knows this.
I do know this. I guess he sort of does look like Aladdin a little bit.
I mean, yeah, I like them like tall, dark, handsome.
Yeah.
That's pretty. Yeah. And like, you know, and that was Aladdin. I mean, I don't actually know how tall Aladdin is. I like to think he's like 6'5".
Very tall. He seems very tall.
Yeah. He seems very lithe. I'll say this.
Yeah.
In doing the research on this a little bit, this movie was kind of dinged by various organizations because Aladdin and Jasmine have very sort of, you know, they look like Disney prince and princesses, right? Whereas the rest of the characters have a very sort of Arabian quality to them that perhaps is not as complimentary. I think that there's something interesting to the fact that Katzenberg told them to make Aladdin look like Tom Cruise, which he kind of looks a little bit like Tom Cruise.
I mean, I actually think they sort of missed the mark on that one.
Tom Cruise famously short in Aladdin is 6'5", as established.
It's true. Also, like, I think he's got a little bit of a squareness to him. I don't know. Tom Cruise might not be the best, you know, but it is interesting that And this isn't surprising necessarily. Disney did for a very long time have a look, right? Like they did want their princes and princesses to look a certain way. So I can understand some people taking umbrage with that. I do think that Aladdin's a good looking kid.
Yes.
He's basically shirtless through the whole movie. He's Say wearing less, his little vest. Phil. Just his
Say
little
less,
vest.
Phil. Say less, honestly.
I just mean
it was
in the
probably
sense
my sexual awakening, honestly, was Aladdin.
That's interesting because on a previous episode we had a sexual awakening for Tarzan, which '99
it was. Yes.
It was not me. It was our guest.
Tarzan's hot.
Yeah, no, Tarzan is hot.
And Tarzan is just, you know, a
categorically hot. Categorically hot.
It feels hot. Like also intentionally hot, right? Like going for hot.
Yeah.
Yes, right? But I would go as far to say that, yes, while like if we're really looking objectively at Jasmine and Aladdin, like if I'm really being honest,
yes.
Jasmine is 10 times hotter than Aladdin.
Oh, Jasmine's, yes.
I was going to say as a budding baby bisexual at the time, this movie was formative for me because Aladdin and Jasmine, both very hot. And then Jafar has just enormous chaos queer energy. He just like,
yes, he does.
Feels like he's going to come in and blow everything. It's like, yeah, I really like just glommed onto all of them as my, you know, yeah.
I would also go as far to say that I also had a crush on Jafar. And that's also so telling about my type now. And Phil, you know what I mean.
I do. I do. I mean, it should be said that the fact that you, SD, had a crush on all four leads, one of which is a blue genie with no legs.
Yes.
A ghost or an apparition, however you want to call it. I think that's kind of amazing. I think that speaks volumes about you, SD.
I would go as far as to say that I also had a crush on Iago. Because I love
Noah Pooh.
What's his name?
Gilbert Gottfried. Gilbert Gottfried.
Yes. May he rest in peace.
Yes. He's phenomenal in this movie.
Jafar! I think that energy is also something that I'm probably going to have to unpack this in therapy, actually, later today.
I think that
I'm coming to a lot of realizations.
It is interesting because, Emily, you texted me about the narrative of Aladdin.
Yeah.
And how it really is. And again, this is very Disney, but
problematic?
Like. No. I was going to say just like very easy to understand, a very straight line for the most part. But it does have this agent of chaos at the center of it in Robin Williams, who's clearly deviating from what's actually like the path. But do you want to expound on that, Emily?
First of all, I just want to be clear that Robin Williams was playing someone who can shapeshift into anything that baby boomers will find funny. And that's who you want to be in a relationship with, honestly.
Yes.
I think the thing about Robin Williams is like he's brilliant in this movie. And like the genie is a wonderful creation. And like, I you know, the groundswell to get him an Oscar nomination was, I think, a just one. But he kind of destroyed Western civilization just a little bit because like that whole thing where he comes in and makes a pop culture reference to like undercut the drama of a moment is like all storytelling now. Yep. And to me, that's like kind of the first time that happens. And when you have Robin Williams doing it, you can get away with it because he's like, you know, an incredibly clever genius mind. But now it's just like people are trying to script it and it feels really lame and like not very organic in a way that he could make it feel.
It's also the beginning of stunt voice casting. Mm-hmm. So, you know, obviously you don't have to look any farther than mostly DreamWorks, but I do feel like others sort of ran with the ball.
I remember when Little Mermaid came out, Disney Channel ran like a big promotional thing that was like, and we got Buddy Hackett. And I was like, okay, good for you.
Okay.
And
then, yeah.
It's interesting.
Kudos.
Like, it becomes very much the mold of animated movies of getting big stars. I'm not convinced necessarily, and I don't really think if you look at the box office that actually matters in the greater scheme of things. I think kids movies are kids movies, and I think that parents are going to take their kids to see animated movies whoever is the voice talent. I don't necessarily think it ultimately matters in the greater scheme of things.
I would add a caveat, though. I think that when there is a musical and there is a singer that is in the movie, I think that that adds cachet. If Whitney Houston had done a Disney movie, do you know how many of, like, me and my friends would have gone to see it every day that ended in Y? It would have just been like, Egypt? You said it.
The Prince of Egypt was Whitney and Mariah.
And Mariah.
Correct?
But only over the credits. Like, only over the closing credits.
I know. But I guess what I'm saying is, like, if she had voiced a character in... Do you know what I mean?
I do. She has a very big year in 92 with The Bodyguard.
Bodyguard. That's another favorite of mine. For many reasons that we'll offline about.
Now that we're kind of back on the music thing, I do kind of want to ask you, Esty, because you write like songs that people perform, but you also like write scoring, underscore music. And the thing I think is brilliant about Alan Menken is he writes these songs and then turns them into underscore, and like they have kind of a different emphasis. And I don't know enough about music to know if I'm just like barking up the wrong tree here, but like I'm wondering, like, is there a different burden when you're writing a song for people to perform versus scoring, and like how do you mesh those two in a way that Menken does?
Absolutely. I mean, one of the reasons that I love scoring so much, well, there's a couple reasons, but the main reason is I don't have to fucking worry about lyrics. It's really nice. It's really nice.
Sure.
I could go on for days about how much I love Alan Menken and how I think that he's a genius. But he's kind of the North Star, I think, for, you know, most of this, the scoring that I do where there are lyrics, which is few and far between, but like the way that he, this is just kind of like songwriting 101, but it really is, he tugs at the heartstrings and puts darts in those chakras. Just because it is almost like so earnest, and I think you have to be that way with Disney movies, right? But also the harmonies that he uses, like he's an amazing arranger. And you don't have to be an arranger to be a composer, but he just happens to be both. So like the way that he arranges the strings, and I think that he's a genius. But on my side of the street, being as a composer, it's nice also to have.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
To have something to be able to like uplift a film with music and have it almost not, you as a composer, you don't want to be noticed. Does that make sense? Like that's always been my thing, and I think that that's the way it is for a lot of composers. Like I don't necessarily want people to leave and be like, oh, I love the score. What I mean?
No, 100%. I think it's interesting too how, I mean, having been through the process a couple times, when you watch something without score and then watch something with score, you literally are like, oh, I didn't know how to feel until I saw it with score. The score is there to sort of gird the emotional, journey of
the film. But at the same time, you don't want to tell the audience how to feel either.
No, 100%, for sure.
You know what I mean?
No, for sure. So, I mean, I think that
towing that line.
Totally. When you're working, and this is, I'm assuming, when you're working with directors, they're saying to you, this is how this should feel. I don't want you to necessarily tell people how to feel, but like it needs to feel like this. Is that, I mean, yes. how is that sort of how you're directed by directors when you're doing your,
well, there's that, but there's also, you know, I'll also get guidelines. Like we want no piano in this score.
Right.
No, I don't want to hear a piano. And then they're like, but we want it to feel really emotional and like right. You're like, okay, so I'm going to do that with a sousaphone.
Yeah.
Or I'm going to do that with a, I mean, yeah. Honestly, cool. Challenge accepted.
I'm going to hire you to score something and be like, I only want sousaphone. That's all. That's it.
Okay. Only.
Is it Sousical the Musical? Only using sousaphone?
I'd be remiss if I didn't also bring up the Howard Ashman element of this as well, which is that Howard Ashman had pitched an idea of this sort of animated musical adaptation of Aladdin. It was this 40-page film treatment, and it was this sort of a campy 1930s musical that he had planned. As we know, Howard Ashman passed away in March of 91. He had only composed two songs, technically one which was cut, but Prince Ali is really kind of the only Ashman song in this.
He did do Friend Like Me and I think Arabian okay. Nights. Yeah, like okay. You can
know if he did the whole yeah. thing or if it's vestiges.
This is me cutting right. in to say like I was a huge Broadway head at the time, sure. So like I could tell when it switched to Tim Rice, because mm-hmm. like Tim Rice is a really good lyricist, but he is a much more blunt lyricist than Howard Ashman. Howard Ashman's lyrics are very clever and fun while also being approachable. Mm-hmm. And Tim Rice is like, you know, a whole new world is Tim Rice. And you want kind of that approach so when you're though. Doing that love song. It's so good.
Yes.
You want that approach for a love song. But like when he's trying to do it with some of the other songs, when he does the Prince Ali reprise, which Tim Rice wrote those lyrics for, you can really tell like the difference in sure. their approach. I'm not saying quality wise. I just think they're very different lyricists in an interesting way.
I also feel it needs to be said, and I don't know if you know this, Esty, Proud of Your Boy. A song which was deleted from the film because Katzenberg didn't want, there was a whole storyline with Aladdin's mom. So that was cut out of the film, but there's a song called Proud of Your Boy, which is the inspiration for the Proud Boys.
No.
Yeah.
No.
It's one of the most insane pieces of trivia that's ever been, but that is their inspiration for the name, the Proud Boys.
Gavin McInnes, the founder of the Proud Boys, like misunderstood the purpose of the song and was like, it's people aren't allowed to be proud to be a boy anymore. Yeah, it's all about being girls. And like the thing about Proud of Your Boy is Howard Ashman was dying of AIDS and wrote a song about like how like that was clearly influenced by like all these people who were dying of this terrible disease and wanted their parents to acknowledge them. And it somehow it's like the fucking Matrix.
It's a total misreading of a thing and twisting it into something you want it to be, which is obviously the entire, you know, fucking MAGA Proud Boys movement, so it shouldn't be a surprise, but I just love that it's a deleted song from Aladdin. It's so amazing.
Yeah, I need to hear get the backstory on like how, like what deep dive
it's incredible
was this
incredible.
Guy doing on like YouTube.
It's in the musical, am I correct in
he
this like the Broadway musical.
My understanding is he like saw it performed at like a kid's concert at like a school and
come
was like,
on.
This is a song about how no one could be proud to be a boy anymore.
I love it. It's perfect. There's all these weird sort of like controversial things that exist in Aladdin that I love. This is one of them. The other is, and I don't know if you guys, do you know the whole like, so there's this moment in the film when when the tiger is attacking Aladdin, and if you listen to
Raja
is attacking Aladdin, and it's a shot of Jasmine walking towards camera, and you can hear Aladdin trying to talk Raja down from attacking him. Okay. But if you listen to it, it sounds suspiciously like him saying, "Good teenagers take off their clothes."
No. No, no, no. No. No, no, no.
So much so that they had to redub it at a certain point. So there was a VHS edition of this film that they had to change the audio for. And if you listen to it now, and I was listening for it when I was watching it yesterday, they've modulated the volume on it, so you can't really make it out. But basically, the directors have come out and said, like, there was some sort of a recording and this, that, and whatever. And the, long story short, there was a time when it actually did sound like that. And it's
okay. I mean, this is opening a whole can of worms because, you know, there's like a whole like conspiracy theory that like Disney animators, when they're making their movies, just do like, are just perverts and do like a bunch of drugs and are like, this will be hilarious if I put this in the movie. No one's gonna catch this.
Correct.
And I don't know. I don't think my brain can go there.
When they fixed that, do you think they had trouble getting Steve from Full House back in to do ADR?
Sure. Like,
do you think?
No, I'm sure Steve was. Yeah, Steve was already in his PJs with acne medication on his way, like, to the sound studio to do ADR. Like, me in, coach.
I grew up in a super fundamentalist Christian home, and like, this was one of two movies I saw in theaters in 1992. And like, that was the thing. We were all like, well, Disney sneaks these secret things in, and like, it would, these totally innocuous things. Like, there's a thing in Lion King where people were like, well, that spells out sex in the clouds.
It does,
And like,
Phil,
but like,
no, it doesn't.
Yes, it does.
Emily, keep going.
There was this just total belief that like Disney was trying to indoctrinate children by like doing subliminal. It was just such a weird idea to like believe in.
The only one that has been proven, because I had it, like I can see it, is because, so I got the VHS of The Little Mermaid. You know the one I'm going to say.
I do. I know. I think I know what you're about to say.
So I had the VHS of The Little Mermaid, and I got it at Costco when I was 3. And all of my VHSs are still at my parents' house.
Love it.
And like, I gotta say, like maybe like 10 years ago, I think someone brought it up that on the original cover of The Little Mermaid, there's like the sand castle. And one of the towers is like a throbbing hard dick.
It is.
And it is, in fact, a throbbing hard dick. I can attest, can confirm, throbbing hard, like Thunderdome, like staircase, like throbbing vein staircase to an uncircumcised penis.
Yeah. It's pretty impressive that they got away with it.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, were these people, like, I just don't understand. I just don't understand.
Here's what I'll say. And I'm not making excuses for any of this behavior, but I'll say this. Animated movies take a very long time to make.
Agreed.
And it's a painful process. And I imagine that you're looking for anything you can find to entertain yourself as you're doing this sort of stuff. But it also feels like you're playing with fire, because if someone discovers what you're doing.
My favorite of these is like, The Rescuers had this like actual pornographic image in it that was in background, and you couldn't like see it unless you froze it. And like, that movie came out in the 70s. They didn't ever anticipate that people would be able to do that.
No way.
Yeah. They had to remove it. They had to remove it.
My childhood is over. Officially
I'm so
done.
Sorry to have ruined this for you.
That's why we brought you on, SD, to destroy your childhood.
Honestly.
I do want to say one other thing, though, speaking of your fundamentalist religious upbringing, Emily.
Thank you.
The director reportedly said that Jafar is based on Nancy Reagan.
Come on.
This explains so much about why I found him attractive.
Yeah, exactly.
Which I think is fucking perfect.
Just say no.
I mean, it's worth, I do just want to sort of briefly, there's not a ton of plot really to this film when everything is said and done, but I do kind of want to just jump around to a couple points that I do think are worth talking about. The opening scene is shockingly unscripted, completely unscripted. The peddler at the beginning is Robin Williams, who's sort of giving this kind of opening,
pitch, if you will.
Yeah. Pitch of like
also
sort of
makes
how
Julianne Fries.
Exactly. Exactly.
He's supposedly like also playing, like he's playing the genie playing a guy.
Yes.
Which is like such a weird creative choice, but
and
I love
it. They were going to reveal it. There was a version of it where at the end they were going to kind of circle back to the character and he was going to like take off whatever and you were going to realize that it was the genie, but they were also just like, who cares? Just like, we don't need it. So like, who cares?
Sure. They were tired by then.
They're just like, whatever.
Let's put the movie out.
Can you imagine if that was the shocking reveal at the end? Look at the twist. The genie was also this guy that you forgot about.
You completely forgot about that. It was pointless. I remember as a kid, and this was a big deal at the time as well, the Cave of Wonders, that lion.
Yes.
And
yes.
That was like the first use of 3D animation. Or one of the first.
I do remember that. Yes.
Because they do it once in Beauty and the Beast, which is the big circular room that they dance in. That sort of that has like a 3D
with her dress.
Yeah. So like that actually was the first use of it. But then they kind of went even farther with it here. And as a kid, I remember like really being like, holy shit, that looks rad. Like
Very cool.
Just felt so new.
It looks so bad now. Like it looks like a computer game from that era where you're just like, when you play Myst and it would be like, it works. But yes,
I feel the same way about Jurassic Park. I can't watch the CGI. I can't.
Really?
It is pretty rough in that scene where the dinosaurs are like running.
You know what I mean? It takes me out of it.
Oh, are you talking about the first money shot where you see where you?
Yes.
Yeah, it's not. But the T-Rex. Come on, T-Rex still looks pretty fucking rad. Come on, now.
You gotta remember, when's the last time you saw it?
I mean, recently. I love Jurassic
Park. Like when? I mean, no. Listen, no shade. I love Jurassic Park, but I'm saying like in like looking back. Mm-hmm. With what we have now,
sure,
it's hard not for it, like the shine to be rubbed off.
Sure,
do you know what I mean?
Sure,
but in retrospect, I mean now, but looking at Aladdin, though, I think that 3D animation still holds up.
I think the cave, Emily, like the actual 3D animation of the cave itself. Mm-hmm. Like the lion cave, whatever
that holds up.
That holds up. It's the flying stuff.
The flying around. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. For sure.
Who wakes my eternal slumber?
Your one woman show is.
I'm telling you, it's coming together.
It's coming together.
Coming together. 99
seats. It really
is. 99 seats.
And also, I think to your point, Esty, about Jurassic Park versus what have you, like when you're doing something that is. Biologically like an animal of some sort, we know what it looks like, so we're a lot harder on those type of effects than like T2, which I watched recently, and you're just like, that just still looks rad because he's just like a metal liquid man, and you're like, you're just like, that looks awesome. So I think that when it's something in the natural world that you're trying to recreate, I think that that's a lot harder to do.
I agree, but I
think that the one question I had for you guys watching it this time that did bump me a little bit in terms of the mechanics of plot.
Okay.
Why does the Sultan's ring have powers over some machine that tells them that Aladdin is the diamond in the rough? It's a little sweaty and I'm not really sure why that is a thing.
Yeah, it's kind of a reach.
They just yada yada it kind of. And they're just like, hey, this ring doesn't. Like, what? Okay, sure.
I think at some point they were probably like, this movie is just going to make so much money, it doesn't even matter.
I imagine that, like, they were just like, diamond,
rough.
Yeah, great, sure. But it definitely, this time I was watching, I was like, wait a second. Iago is running on a treadmill to power a machine that the ring tells them. And it's just like, what? It's literally, it makes no sense. But
I've seen this movie a billion times. I've never once thought about that. I've never been like, I've always been like, of course the parrot has to run on a treadmill to power a machine.
same, so, honestly.
I mean, whatever.
But I do, and tell me if you think this could be a reach also, though.
Yeah.
Do you think that maybe because the plot is a little hairy
in
in Aladdin, do you think that then, because right after this is when Pixar was created, right?
95 is when Toy Story, but yeah, I mean, they start like, Pixar around though. Yeah,
they like it again. Animation takes forever, yeah. Right? So like sure. Pixar, I think was
for sure totally.
Do you think the animators and storytellers saw Aladdin and was like, oh, we need to fix this. We're going to make movies that like literally like the plot is everything and they're all going to be connected and we're just going to make movies where the plot is everything.
Well, I think that Disney, and I would say this is still kind of the case, is that they were so fused to these fairy tales and to these sort of old stories, public domain, whatever you want to call it, and sort of a reimagining of those things, they weren't as hemmed to logistics and a logical plot, right? Because fairy tales exist in some other kind of realm of logic, whereas Pixar, it seems anyway, prides itself on like a groundedness and an emotional component that I don't think Disney does as much.
And that's why I'm grasping at straws here, but I can imagine the smarty pantses that founded Pixar were probably like, what am I watching? Like what? Like, yes, of course I want Iago to run on a hamster wheel treadmill and power this mechanism. But also like, I'm going to make movies like WALL-E and and correct me if I'm wrong, I could be getting the history wrong, but isn't there like this an infamous story that all of the animators and writers and storytellers that founded Pixar sat at one dinner and created the ideas for every single Pixar movie over the course of the next 20 years?
It was like the first like 5 or 7 or something like that. But yeah. Something along those lines.
I gotta say, I'm somewhat skeptical of your theory, but the thought of Steve Jobs, one of the people who was an early investor in Pixar, seeing Aladdin and being like, I don't understand how this machine works. And then like calling up the Pixar people and being like, listen, we can't do
anything. We need
to
do better.
Yeah.
I just feel like they were just like, we need to do better. I don't know. I can imagine just knowing like my animator friends and like how. Not, I don't want to say pretentious, but for animators, pretentious.
Sure.
I can imagine the people at Pixar, because they were kind of on the precipice of technology at the time, being like, oh, we're going to blow this shit out of the water. You think this is a good story? Get ready for Toy Story.
I do think like, that it is pretty sweaty. Disney's not that sweaty is the thing. That's why it jumped out at me this time watching it, because like generally speaking, their stuff is pretty clean and it doesn't, you know, require much leaps in terms of like, they just don't do stuff like this. Am I wrong, Emily? Do you
think that's like, and I think that, well, I also think that maybe it was just that there was a really good premise.
Yeah.
Like the premise is great. We just got to get there, like figure it out. Like the stuff in the middle doesn't matter.
Yeah,
we got some killer songs.
I do think like that there's a Disney formula that is so attached to the princess figure.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And like the thing about this movie that made it it was their first like really enormous hit. And the thing about it is they took the princess formula and were like, what if a boy had that formula? Because like a lot of people complain about Princess Jasmine being, you know, having no agency, which is true, but she's effectively the Prince Charming figure, and Prince Charming never has any agency. Yep, yep. And so this is very much fitting their formula, which, and then they also kind of tried to do Raiders of the Lost Ark on top of that, which I think is a genius move, but they,
agreed.
I mean, the Indiana Jones movies are all super fucking sweaty. Yeah. So like that's, you know, totally.
What I think also, I mean, I know that there was a big moment between Beauty and the Beast and this, where they were like, boys, we need to get boys. We feel as though there's too many princesses. We're too quote unquote feminine, whatever the case might be. And this movie was enormously successful exactly for that reason, I imagine, which is that it kind of, and I mean, and Lion King is also a boy story as well. I mean, it's just, you know, a boy lion, but like,
I also had a crush on Simba. We can also unpack that later.
We can unpack that at a later date, but
I mean, Nala's hot. I'm just going to be clear.
Hot. Yeah.
And Scar's hot.
Scar, thank you. You guys, I'm unpacked. Yeah. Like my therapist is going to Dr. McCurdy, get ready.
Dr. McCurdy, get ready. I think it's interesting. It takes about a half hour for the genie to show up. The movie's only 90 minutes. Yes. So like we're really talking about an entire act without essentially our second lead. But, you know, the whole new world sequence is beautiful. It's iconic. You know, it's obviously fantastic. Jasmine in Chains has a very Princess Leia vibe, which I'm not sure how to feel about. And there is a very sort of like Jafar kissing her and wanting to make her his like slave, quote unquote. There's just stuff going on in the third act of this film that gets really kind of crazy and a little bit icky that I'm just not really sure how to sort of unpack, but that's whatever. But I, you know, ultimately I think that this movie moves like a freight train. Part of it is because of the genie, which is just, the jokes are fast and furious coming at you and the manic energy that he brings to it. And you said this when we were texting, Emily, but like it shouldn't work for a myriad of reasons. The first one being it's just Robin Williams so off the chain that you're just like, I don't even really know how to process what's going on half the time. But it works because I ultimately think it's just the perfect amount of him. I think that him not showing up for a half an hour allows you to settle into the film a little bit so that he,
I agree.
You know what I mean? Like otherwise, I think if it was 90 minutes straight of this,
I think like my objective film critic brain is like this movie has problems. Like this movie has, you know, it has representation problems. It has all these different things. Yes. But I think the third act is kind of perfect. I think the thing where like Aladdin betrays the genie and then doesn't betray the genie and there's this big confrontation and he wins by tricking Jafar. Yes. Like I think all of that is so good that you kind of overlook everything. And then you've got this great Robin Williams performance on top of it. Sure. Like it's a movie that shouldn't work, but does work. And then, you know, they made the Pirates of the Caribbean movies sort of like based on this template. Like, and look what happened to us.
Like he frees the genie at the end, right? So he technically becomes person, but he's not a person because he can still fly.
He still has magic powers.
And he still has magic powers.
You have just freed a creature that can do anything.
Anything. I love it. That's the dream. Yeah. Are you kidding me? That is the dream. I'm a genie in a bottle, baby. Gotta rub me the right way, honey.
Great song. Great song.
Great song.
Great 99 song. We do a rating system on this as we wrap this up, Esty. 0 to 99 in honor of our 99 podcast.
I thought we were going to go 0 to 92 and be like, high B plus is like the best.
The best we can do in 92.
Stick
best to 99. We can do.
As a child in 92 or around 92 when you saw this film, I assume this one was a 99 for you, Esty. Maybe I'm wrong.
Yes. This was like very, very hot.
Do you very, feel very like it's scale. Is it still at a 99 for you, or where are you at on this now, out of curiosity?
I feel like, I mean, yes, it does have problems.
Sure.
It is slightly problematic.
It's not as problematic as I would argue the remake with Will Smith is, but that's
agreed. But yeah, and again, we can't look at a film that came out in 92 with a 2023 lens.
Not fair.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Not fair.
I agree. Yeah.
I would wager. Mm. I was born in 86. Mm-hmm. I think that's the number that I'm going to go with.
That sounds good. I mean, it's interesting you say that because when I saw it in 92, you know, I liked it. I don't know that it completely blew me away at the time. I probably would have given it like an 85 in 92. I'm actually higher now than I was then. Again, I was 12. I probably thought I was cool. I wasn't, but I probably thought that I was like, you know, just old.
Phil, you're
old
cool now.
Oh, that's stop. Very nice to say, Esty.
Don't do that.
But I think that now in hindsight, I actually think it's better now than when I was a kid. Like, I think I watch this film now, problematic 92 stuff aside. I do think it's a masterpiece. Like, I do think that these four movies of like Little Mermaid, Beauty and the Beast, Aladdin and Lion King are pretty much unimpeachable. Like,
you keep doing Rescuers Down Under Erasure, and I will not stand for it. That came out in 1990. Like, come on, Phil.
But I would say
that was right before
like,
the New Guard. That was like right before the New Guard, Emily. If we're looking at like eras of Disney, I would wager to say that just Rescuers, just it's a different caliber of film. It just is.
it's a different, I mean, that whole Black Cauldron and like all that stuff, they're just different Disney movies. I don't feel like they're the same thing. But anyway, all that being said, I think I'm probably at like a 95 now, truly. Like, I think it's, wow. I think it's a great movie. And I really do love it. But Emily, where are you at on this movie?
My baby just stopped crying. Like, great timing. Thank you, Phil. At the time, I was a huge Robin Williams fan. I recorded Mork and Mindy every night so I could like watch it the next day on
me.
VHS.
Nanu Nanu.
More calling Orson, more calling Orson. And so I just was like, I thought Robin Williams was the shit. Like my two chief creative influences were like young blonde girls around my age who were on television. So like Jodie Sweetin and celebrity impressionists. I was like, this is who I'm going to be. I'm going to be a celebrity impressionist, just like Robin Williams or Dave Coulier. They were my heroes. So at the time I was like, this is the best movie ever made. I definitely would have given it a 99 in 1992. Now I'm like, I think this is a really well done movie. I'd go like 88. I think it has problems, but I think it's just like a really strong, entertaining movie with like a pretty impeccable third act.
Great, impeccable third act. Amazing songs. I will say the music is incredible.
They're amazing. They're amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're amazing. Songs are amazing. Yes.
Before we let you go, Esty, next week we are doing A Few Good Men with Liz Hannah and her husband Brian. Do you have thoughts on A Few Good Men while we have you? Are you a fan of A Few Good Men?
Or I don't know if I can pontificate on A Few Good Men.
I don't need you to pontificate. I was just curious if you're are you a Tom Cruise, Aaron Sorkin, Demi Moore fan?
I mean, who isn't? I mean, actually, you know, I mean, I love Rob Reiner.
Yes. He's amazing.
Rob Reiner. Yeah. Rob Reiner.
This
honestly,
is him in the pocket.
You're not wrong.
This is him when he's killing it. Yeah.
I
just mean like this run he has.
Okay. There's other Rob. I mean, we can also offline about this.
When Harry Met Sally is a perfect movie. I mean, come on now.
Like there's the Rob Reiner of it all. There's other Rob Reiner movies that I would wager to say are.
Yeah,
more my speed.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. I just, I think it's interesting to sort of, this is him. I'm kind of surprised, and we'll talk about this, obviously, Emily, on the episode, but like, A Few Good Men maybe should have won Best Picture. Like, I'm kind of surprised that, like,
Who won Best Picture that year?
I'm forgiven one in 92, but I just think I'm a little surprised of the nominees. That's all I'm saying, Emily, just in terms of like, it is interesting. It was a big hit. Rob Reiner, this was probably his moment. If he was gonna, I don't even think he was nominated for Best Director for this film.
He was not.
So like Rob Reiner, it's just interesting.
Yeah. I think Unforgiven all the way, but we can dig into that.
We'll dig into that.
Yeah.
But
I will say I'm a big Demi Moore fan. That is for sure.
Yeah.
Tom Cruise, take him or leave him.
Interesting. That's
how'd you feel about Top Gun Maverick? Did you see it, ST?
I loved it for the pomp and circumstance. I also oh my god, what is his name? You're gonna have to edit this.
No. Are you talking about Miles Teller? Are you talking?
No,
about...
no, he's an Insecure. Oh my god, I'm friends with him. What is wrong with me?
Ellis, is that who we're talking about?
Yes, yes. Okay, what is his first? Jay Ellis. Jesus, fucking Christ.
There it is.
I love Jay Ellis. So
he's very good.
Yes. He's very good in it. I've seen Top Gun Maverick twice just because I just think that it's I don't think that I loved it more than the original, but I did love the movie as like a standalone, not even like not thinking about it as like a, you know,
I think that Tom Cruise, listen, I'm going to go, I am a big Tom Cruise fan, and just in terms of like movie star Tom Cruise, kind of, you know, he's pretty amazing. I have my issues with him believing in aliens and all sorts of other things, but
yes,
I do like the thing where he's trying to die on camera for our entertainment. I think that is great.
It's a good bit. Yeah. It's a good bit. But Esty, we can't thank you enough for taking the time to talk Aladdin.
Oh, anytime. Looking forward to Newsies whenever you want me back on the show.
Cannot wait to talk about Newsies, a movie that I have not seen since I was 12. A movie that has quite a cult love. Like people fucking ride for Newsies hard.
Those are the people that I want to meet. I want to, Emily, just tell me, were you a Newsies fan since you were a Broadway bitch?
I saw it many years later and I liked it, but like, yeah, I didn't see it at the age where I was going to just like watch it over and over, but it's like really? A really good movie. Yeah. Yeah.
You didn't see it when it came out in the theaters?
I didn't. I lived an hour away from the closest theater. I only saw two movies in theaters that year.
What were the two movies, Emily? It was this
Aladdin, and the other one is the mystery we're going to solve on this podcast, Phil. It's a mystery box show. Sure? Yeah. I know what it is, okay, but you're going to figure it out.
I can't wait to listen to that episode.
I'm very excited to talk Newsies. What's his face? Ortega, right? Who directed it? Am I crazy?
So, okay.
Yeah. Like, so, of High School Musical fame.
We're going to talk Newsies. We're going to talk dance with you. This is another thing we didn't talk about because this is an animated movie. But Esty, you know, dance is a big part of your life as well.
Huge.
We'll unpack Newsies at a later date. Yeah. But I'm excited to talk about dancing and all that kind of stuff.
Yes. Well, thank you guys so much for having me. God. Anytime. Thank you. Anytime you want me on the show. So nice to meet you, Emily. I love it.
Absolutely. Listen, this is a very embarrassing thing to admit, but every night when my baby won't sleep, I do sing her Hallelujah. I think she likes it. That's a thing she enjoys, but we'll
stop. Okay, well, when we're offline, I'll send you a video of us singing it, and then you can just play that for your baby so that you don't have to sing it anymore, and you can just press play.
That's you're the best. Thank you so much. We'll talk to you soon. Bye.
Bye, you guys.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.